Welcome to the Faith Element Podcast for the March 21, 2021 session, focusing on John 12, verses 20 through 33. Good news? I'm David Cassidy.
I'm Nikki Hardiman.
I'm Crystal Shepherd.
And I'm Daniel Glaze.
Well, I want to take just a moment at the beginning of this podcast to thank our sponsor. We don't say a lot about them all the time, but they're always in the background helping us out and really funding the work that's underneath Faith Element, and that's the company of Faith Lab. Faith Lab, as you may know, is a creative services firm that is really focused on supporting the communications work of congregations and religious nonprofits. We work with interfaith groups. There's a lot that Faith Lab does, but it's all focused around helping churches, helping nonprofits tell their story and connect with people who care about what they're doing to bring folks on aboard. And so if your congregation or nonprofit needs help in any of these areas, we'd love to help you out. You can go to faithlab.com. There's a brand new website sitting there. And you can learn about the kinds of services that Faith Lab provides. But I'll give you the quick overview. And that's three areas where Faith Lab does most of its work. And that's in website development. And we all know how important the web has become, especially during the pandemic, and doing a good job in how we connect with people. But also with design, everything from logo development, newsletter design, worship bulletin design, all of these things communicate quality when they're done well. And finally, Faith Lab has started this year doing mobile apps. So if your congregation or nonprofit would like to have an iOS or Android app to help connect with your people, we can help with that too. Check it all out at faithlab.com and be sure to scroll to the bottom of the homepage there and sign up for the email newsletter. It's just once a month, but it's got lots of helps and tips. We thank our friends at Faith Lab for supporting Faith Element and for supporting this podcast. Well, we have another text from John today, and Daniel, could you help us get started with it?
Sure, I'll be glad to. So here we are. The fifth Sunday in Lent. Next week is Palm Sunday, or Passion Sunday, depending on your congregation's emphasis. However, the lectionary for this Sunday seems to jump ahead a bit. As Nikki points out in her video on this text, today's passage from John 12 comes after Jesus mourns Lazarus, then raises him from the dead. This passage comes after Mary's anointing of his feet, and after Jesus' triumphal entry into Jerusalem with that palm parade that greets him. And all the reactions to all these events seems to be divided, perhaps. What I mean is there are those who see all this and want to know more about Jesus. And then there are those who want to have him destroyed. This division is reflected even among the disciples. Some of them become even more devoted to Jesus, while one, Judas, is considering ways to betray him. All eyes are upon Jesus for good or for bad. The passage begins with, quote, some Greeks, end quote, who apparently have become quite taken with Jesus. These could have been Hellenistic Jews, but most commentators indicate they were likely Gentiles living among the community to which John is writing his gospel. But anyway, these Greeks approach Philip and say, "Sir, we wish to see Jesus." Philip shares this with Andrew, and then the two go and tell Jesus that there are some people who want to see him. But interestingly, John doesn't tell us that Jesus goes to see them. Apparently, he leaves them out on the porch. Instead, Jesus uses the time to teach his disciples that time is drawing near. His language is foreboding, and in a moment of vulnerability and honesty, Jesus says, "My soul is troubled." Verse 27. I have glossed over those words before, but today they leap off the page for me. Jesus' life and ministry were marked by love, Love is why Jesus was born, and love is why Jesus died. Yes, he seemed determined to show love through his suffering and death, steadfast love, we often call it. But just because something is done in love doesn't mean it was easy. Jesus' soul was troubled. And the thought of that troubles me, and I'm not quite sure what to do with it. Maybe we can talk about that some more. Anyway, in these verses, Jesus returns to a theme that he has preached about elsewhere. Those who love their life will lose it. Those who give their life away will keep it forever. What do you think Jesus is getting at here? What does it mean to lose our lives by loving them? I don't know that I have a sufficient answer, but something that occurs to me is the way that you and I often chase after those things that may provide comfort for us, but hold others captive. See, I love a great bargain. But if I want a $20 sweatshirt, and that's as far as I can see, getting that sweatshirt at that price, and I want that because it will make my life better, that means someone in an undeveloped country will manufacture it for near slave wages. Or if we consume violence and misogyny in video games or entertainment, we not only harm ourselves, we harm those who are being exploited. And I believe we harm our children who are watching everything we do. If loving ourselves, our own lives, is our singular goal, we have in so many ways contributed to the loss of life of others. But on the contrary, if we are willing to lose our lives, we will gain them. I think of Martin Luther King's emphasis on nonviolence as I listen to Jesus' teaching here. On the receiving end of fire hoses trained on them or police dogs attacking them, Martin Luther King Jr. and his prophetic marchers for justice showed in no uncertain terms the reality of the evil fallacy of white supremacy laid bare. "Let them get their dogs," King said. "Let them get their hose. We will leave them standing before their God and the world, spattered with the blood and reeked with the stench of their Negro brothers," he says. His point, I believe, is that once exposed through the power of love, the spirit of racism loses its power. If we are willing to lose our lives, Christ says, we will receive them for eternity. And lest we think that must always mean grand, powerful, sweeping, save-the-world gestures, consider this. Faithfulness to Christ may mean those everyday ways we lose our lives for others. Putting others first, serving one another, lifting one another up. For if we can do that, especially now at such a dark time as this, we light a candle, we place it in the window, we offer hope to a world desperate to see it. That's a little background on our text for today.
Daniel, thank you for tackling this text. As I am sitting here thinking over the things that you said and all that it brought up for me, I find myself struggling to know how to respond because this is such a hard lesson. It's one of those things that if we let the truth of it sink in on us, all of a sudden we will see all the ways we have chosen not to lose our lives. That's what's happening for me anyway. I'm thinking about all the times that I've chosen myself over someone else. And it's, you know, of course it's impossible to live this perfectly because we live in a society that makes us complicit simply by participating. The longer I sit here and think about what you've said, the more challenged I feel in my own choices in life. And I think this idea of learning to lose our lives so that we can save our lives is one of those Christian disciplines that takes a lifetime to work at and get partially right. I'm not exactly sure even where to enter in this conversation, except to start by saying this is hard. This one's difficult.
And frankly, there are easier teachings of Jesus to follow.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I even think loving your enemies easier than this one. Mm-hmm. I mean, I mean,
right,
really.
Right, right.
Yes.
Yes.
I mean, because, yeah, the give a cup of cold water to those in need. Yeah, I can do that. I can do that. But this is putting it all on the line.
I mean, this affects everything from the clothes we buy to where we send our kids to school to do we use styrofoam plates at church because they're cheaper, or do we choose paper plates because they're better for the earth, right? Like, you know, or washable plates because they're better for the earth. Like, how do we, it affects every decision that we make every single day.
And it seems like every single day there's another, like, organization or company that we're told that they're not practicing, you know, humane and ethically. And so it's hard because it's like, okay, the other day I had to purchase something and I was like, where am I supposed to buy this? I can go the easy route and go to this big company that I can order from online that has, I will not name, that has a lot of like really unethical practices, or I can go to the store down the street who treats its employees like crap. Where am I supposed to go? And what am I? It's hard. It is hard. It is. I do think loving your enemy is probably a lot easier than this, because you just keep it. It just is a snowball. And where do you go next? And then I go back to just take it up a day at a time. One thing at a time. Mm-hmm.
Right. Absolutely.
Yes.
So that you don't get overwhelmed by all of it.
Yes.
So maybe today I don't purchase a cleaning product that is in a plastic bottle. Maybe I do a refillable.
Right. Right.
You know, tomorrow it may be that I don't buy that $20 sweatshirt, you know, whatever it is. Like, it's just, you just build on those things. That's how faith is built. That's how our practice is built. So,
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. And it calls into question, I mean, on its surface, this sounds like one of those philosophical, sort of theoretical kind of ideas. But when we stop and think, no, I think you said it, Nikki, this impacts every decision I make. And there are conscious decisions that I can make that harm others. And sometimes I'm not even aware, and that makes them no less sinister or no less harmful. Hey, man, I got a great deal on a sweatshirt. Nobody's hurt in that. But that comes at great cost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think it is a very much an uphill battle for us in this age, because for so long, our culture has emphasized the individual, has emphasized competition as the way to greatness.
Right, right.
And all of that lends itself to a, you know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. It's all about me and how I am. And there's nothing wrong with self-improvement. But what Jesus is saying, well, the way to self-improvement is actually helping somebody else pull up.
Right.
And that's costly. It's expensive, and we're not going to do it all the time. But I think a first step is for us to look in the mirror and realize that we swim in water that is so individualistic.
Yes.
That it's hard for us sometimes to think about this does affect someone else, and you know, how do we navigate that? Mm-hmm. How do we teach our children not to only swim in those waters?
Right.
Because they're being socialized for this, you know.
I love that we're talking about how to not be overwhelmed by the thought of this, but I really think that this is part of last week we talked about trusting, right? And to choose to walk this path is to choose to ultimately trust what Jesus teaches. Because what Jesus is saying is, I promise you guys, if you do this, you're going to find your life, right? So the idea of choosing to live our life in different ways, in ways that cause us to lose the life that we have now, ultimately moves us into abundant life. And so when we choose to make the choice that helps the community more than it helps us, when we make the choice to buy ethically sustainable clothing, when we make the choice to vote in a way that might raise our taxes, but overall helps more people, when we choose those things, our life becomes more full and more filled with joy and abundance, even if we have lost things that used to bring us joy and fulfillment. So I think that's the hope in this, and that is where we see that trust come into action.
And Nikki, that speaks to something that you said much more cogently than I did. In my Bible background, I think we often have this. We often get overwhelmed or whatever by some of these teachings because we say, you know, we think faithfulness to Christ is about these grand, you know, almost hugely mm-hmm. sacrificial acts when following Christ is a daily commitment mm-hmm. and living these teachings are, you know, maybe I will be asked to give my life away. But chances are I will be asked to make a decision or two that gives life to someone else.
Mm.
Mm. And that's I think the key to remember. And I don't think that's watering down the teachings of Christ. I think that's realizing that this is an everyday commitment to faithfulness
mm-hmm.
and community.
And if we focus on perfection, we're not going to do very much. It's just going to be frustrating. I mean, it is often a, what's the best I can do in this situation? Mm-hmm. And because sometimes we're not given good choices. Sometimes right. either choice is difficult. And,
right.
and so you do the best you can. And thank God that there's grace. but I think the attempt to do that, that Jesus is calling us to a version of living as humans, as creations of God, that shapes us by these very acts and decisions. And that over time, like you said, Nikki, that abundance comes as we are shaped mm-hmm. by this act of paying attention to where we can give to others, give right. away ourselves to mm-hmm. others. Yeah.
Yeah.
When I think we go back to what Daniel was saying, like that you said, Daniel, that you may be asked to give up your life, but more than likely it's going to be you're going to have to make some decisions to mm-hmm. help another person. I think if we put it in terms of this like big, huge, grand gesture, then it makes it like something we really don't have to do because that's likely to uh-huh. not happen. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? That's likely yeah, to not yeah. happen. But if we look at it, what we're talking about with these everyday choices, then that puts a lot more of the responsibility back on us. It puts more of the real true sense of losing your life to gain it because you're making, I keep thinking about like a tiny little cut, like tiny little cuts, little paper cuts along the way. It's not one big cut. And I don't mean to like make it sound like this gruesome thing, but you know, just like it's going to be a little bit at a time. It's not going to be something that's this big, probably this big, huge, grand gesture.
Right.
But in the end, all of those little things add up to how you lived your life, which is the biggest thing you can give up for Jesus, for God.
Mm. Mm.
So, and I also liked what you said, Daniel, about that just because something is done in love doesn't mean it's easy.
Yeah, I liked that too. That was so good.
I mean, I wrote it down. I'm like, I'm going to just keep that one for later.
Right.
Just to remind myself. And I wonder too, like you said, you wanted to question about Jesus's soul being troubled. And I think like, for me, it's like looking at all this that we're talking about today, that would be enough right there to trouble a soul.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's because he knows this is hard. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that was simply just looking ahead to the cross, but was what I'm about to say. And I mean, it's all troubling.
Mm-hmm. And I'm asking a lot of you. I know I'm asking a lot of you. Mm-hmm. And I'm asking you to radically change how you see life. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be hard. And it's going to be, but it's going to be the best thing you can do with your life.
Yeah, thank you for saying that, because that's the thing. We often, you know, it's like, well, either you have to be willing to die or, you know, and I can't do that, so let's just give up. But the promise Jesus holds out here is, and hello, it's the promise of Easter, that from death comes life.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, that if you are willing to love others in this way, it's, and not because you do it for selfish reasons, but there is life for you too in living like that, in trusting God to care for you if you're willing to give yourself away.
Well, and we all know stories, right, of people who did acts of giving themselves away, and we'll talk about how it changed their lives, whether it was, you know, giving an organ. Donating an organ to someone else, a kidney or otherwise, or maybe adopting a child. I mean, that is a hard and expensive thing to do, and yet people do it because clearly in parenting we give ourselves away for the good of others. It's a concrete place. We understand the gift that comes from that giving away, because most of us as parents would do anything for our children, mm-hmm. not because of some selfish thing, but because, doggone it, that matters more.
Right.
And it is so fulfilling, right?
Yeah.
And I will say, as not that all children, I mean, you children grow up to be their own people, but when you see your child, when you see your child flourishing as an adult, there is an enormous satisfaction. Not that I can take credit for that, but I played a role in it. You know, I might have helped a little along the way, but there is that sense of abundance that comes from knowing that you helped along the journey. I want to close this out today with just a short quote from one of our favorites, Henry Nouwen, who maybe reminds us of the simple, everyday nature of what we're talking about, and that sometimes it's not the huge things, it's the smaller things. He says it this way: did I offer peace today? Did I bring a smile to someone's face? Did I say words of healing? Did I let go of my anger and resentment? Did I forgive? Did I love? These are the real questions. I must trust that the little bit of love that I sow now will bear many fruits, here in this world and in the life to come. Thank you all for this good conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Subscribe to the Faith Element podcast on iTunes or Google Play. Learn more about our Faith Element Bible study curriculum at faithelement.net. Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.